Greetings. The final frontier.
The revolution will be broadcast.
So, how you doing?
How you doing?
There is a fine line between genius and...
Greetings.
Hey, kids!
There's a touch of madness around.
Greetings.
Well, welcome back, partner.
With my little stick in my highly evolved brain, I shall create...
Greetings.
There we are. I prefer to handle this limb.
Alert the troops. We attack
green things
at dawn.
Well, this is all very sophisticated.
If you believe in miracles, love at first sight, and breakfast in bed, contact me for adventures in
green things.
How may I, in all humble servitude, be of assistance?
Three things. Three things. Three things.
Behold the glory that is...
Three things.
Hello.
Hello, darling.
Hello, baby.
Hello.
Well, hi. Welcome to the show today. I'm Jenna, your host, and I'll be sharing three things with you today. Aside from the regular segments, the GWOD and TDIH, and a few giggly bits tossed in, I'm going to talk a little bit about tipping, a little bit about manners, and a little bit about some sort of armchair introspective self-psychology. Sounds like a real hoot, doesn't it? Well, shall we begin? And thing one today, tipping. What is a tip? How do you give it? Who deserves one? If you've ever worked in the hospitality industry, waiting tables, tending bar, carrying luggage, etc., you've probably depended on tips from your customers to make ends meet. Many people who haven't worked in this industry don't realize that servers, guides, drivers, and others who help make our dining, traveling, and other service experiences nicer sometimes aren't even paid minimum wage by their employers. They depend on the gratuities that their customers give them for good service and friendly help. Let's look into the custom of tipping, how it got started, how much we should tip for different services, and examine research that has been done on what makes us tip more or less than usual. A tip or gratuity is a small amount of money given voluntarily as a token of appreciation for a service rendered. According to Webster's Dictionary, the word tip is also considered by many to be an acronym, TIP, to ensure promptness or to ensure prompt service. We tip our servers as a way of thanking them for their good service. We might also leave a very low tip or no tip at all as a signal that the service was terrible. But how did tipping get started in the first place? Why don't employers just pay their employees a regular wage and increase their prices to make up the difference? In some places they do, but so many of us, especially in the United States, are so accustomed to leaving a tip for good service that we end up leaving our servers money anyway, sometimes embarrassing them in the process. In places where tipping is expected, it's usually done in order to encourage the best service possible from servers. There are several theories about where tipping came from. George Foster, a professor of anthropology at UC Berkeley, researched tipping in the early 70s and found that the word tip or gratuity often was associated with drink money, seeming to imply that the customer was buying the server a drink to have later as a way of saying, hey, thanks for the good service. Foster's theory was that the customer was trying to prevent making the server envious of his own ability to sit, drink, and be served. Another theory follows the use of the word tip in the 17th century. The word was used as a verb to mean handed over or to give. This follows suit with the stories of feudal lords throwing gold coins as tips to the peasant in the street to ensure their own safe passage. The TIP acronym I mentioned earlier, to ensure promptness, is said to come from the 16th century coffee houses in England. This idea is challenged, however, because some say acronyms weren't even used until the 1920s. So it appears that the history of tipping is as unclear as the modern practice itself. When else do people pay additional money for a service for which they've already paid without negotiating the amount up front? Well, what is it then that makes us tip more or less? Whether or not we tip depends a lot on the service received, as well as whether or not we think we'll be returning to the same establishment. Sometimes we leave tips simply because it is expected, that and the fact that we don't want to appear to be cheap to our dining companions by stiffing the server. Believe it or not, a lot of research has gone into why we tip and what makes us tip more or less for similar service. Tipping is not always simply a sign of a job well done. The most prominent reason for tipping appears to be more of a guilt issue than a gratitude issue. We know that tipping, at least in the United States, is expected, and if we don't tip, we stand the chance of angering the server, and then who knows what our next visit to the restaurant will be like. Also, our assumption that tipping is designed to encourage good service for our next visit may or may not be accurate. What if we are at a restaurant that we know we won't be back to? What then is our motivation to tip? Some argue it is a way of making ourselves feel better about being served because we know the waiter works hard and isn't paid well. Guilt issues aside, research shows that the quality of service we receive isn't always reflected in the tip we leave. Many who have studied the practice have discovered that excellent service only draws a marginally higher tip than average service. Other things the server might do, however, do make more of a difference, probably without our even realizing it. For example, Cornell University's Center for Hospitality Research has conducted several studies revealing some interesting facts about server habits that can boost tip percentages. Here are a few of them. Touching. Waiters experienced a tip increase from 11.8% to 14.8% of the check total when they briefly touched the shoulder of the customer. Both men and women left higher tips when touched, and although younger customers increased their tip amount more, all ages increased the tip by some amount. Squatting down. Two studies showed that waiters who squatted next to the table when taking orders and talking with the customers increased their tips from 14.9% of the bill to 17.5% of the bill in one study, and from 12% to 15% in another. Apparently, the eye contact and closer interaction creates a more intimate connection and makes us want to give the server more money. Apparently, giving candy helps too. A study that involved giving customers a piece of candy with their bill showed an increase in tip percentage from 15.1% to 17.8%. Another study in which servers gave each customer two pieces of candy with the bill increased the tip from 19% to 21.6% of the bill. Still another study showed that the way the server gave the customer the candy had the largest impact on the increase of the tip. This study had the server initially give each member of the customer's party one piece of candy and then spontaneously offer a second piece of candy. This method increased the tip to 23% of the bill. And last, being helpful really helps. A study of hotel bellmen revealed that just taking a few extra minutes explaining to guests how to operate the television and thermostat and opening the drapes for them and offering to fill the ice bucket increased tips from $2.40 to $4.77. So if you are in the service industry, remember these things. It can't hurt, right? There is no right or wrong when it comes to tipping, just common sense. And tipping is an option, not a must. There are circumstances that are obviously not quite as simple as black and white. Use your judgment when deciding to tip or not to tip. I believe in tipping and I tip well. I also expect the service I receive to be extraordinary and deserving of a tip. It should be kept in mind that tips are a way of expressing satisfaction. Larger tips should be left for those who provide extraordinarily good service. Smaller tips or no tips at all should be left when service is poor. All right then, that's some good info, no matter if you are the tipper or the tippee. Just remember to be polite and give or get what is deserved. It's easy and worth it, like I hope this was thing number one, with which I am finished.
Hollywood, they have a different language that they speak. It's used by all the folks who went to school for just 1 week. It's found inside Variety, a magazine they use. And no one understands it when they read the movie news. Like Hicks makes picks, but the flick needs fix means someone made a movie that bombed. The beats in charge are now at large, means everyone involved is gone. The plot conflicts, no beautiful chicks, so it's coming out on video soon. They're taking their licks, cause the critics say nicks, and the editors are gonna try to save it in the mix.
But the stock sees green on page 13.
Means Disney's up a nickel a share.
It's a long cut deal for a major reel.
Means Rocky number 6, so beware. If you want the poop or you need the scoop on Hollywood Town this week, you're gonna have to learn to talk that variety speak.
Ba-ba-doo-ba-ba-da-ba-doo-ba.
Buffo Smash makes Warner cash, means there's gonna be a sequel next year. Paramount hurts and they're losing their shirts means Schwarzenegger's doing King Lear. Oliver Stone does next Home Alone means he's getting paid an arm and a leg. The budget goes crunch, but his name packs punch, so they call up the accountants and they're gonna do lunch.
Well, the ratings smile on the OJ trial
means a movie of the week to premiere.
Universal Touch Deal with Mr. Spiel
to do 100,000 movies a year. You gotta play it smart if you wanna be part of the crowd that's hip and chic. You're gonna have to learn to talk that variety speak. Normal talk makes producers walk. You might as well speak Greek. You're gonna have to learn, oh, the meeting will adjourn. Unless, my friend, you learn that variety speak.
Yay! Time for the GWOD, the grandiloquent word of the day. Today is October 6th, 2006, which means show number 36 of Three Things, and that means that the letter for today is J, and I love J's. In case y'all didn't already know it, I begin with a J too. So, alright then. Our word for today, beginning with the 10th letter of the alphabet, is jumentous. It is spelled J-U-M-E-N-T-O-U-S. It is an adjective, and it is defined as smelling strongly like horse urine, which is high-colored, strong, and turbid. It is from jumentum, which is completely obsolete Latin, which means beast of burden. I can and will use this in a sentence for you. There was a man in the shop the other day whose personal perfume seemed a bit jumentous for a human being. No, seriously, there was. He didn't look dirty at all. He just smelled as though he had rolled in the muck pile at a farm. I didn't stick around to get any more specific than that, but his odor, the memory of it, bothered me all afternoon.
Ew!
Well then, there it is, our GWOD today, jumentous. Maybe you will soon run across someone stinky and get to use it. Or you can just spend that time hunting for really neat words instead of stenchy folk. Visit the Grandiloquent Dictionary online to do that. Link to that from the homepage of the show, threethings.podomatic.com.
Yeah, I'll get it.
Every so often, an opportunity comes along that is truly once in a lifetime.
Sign here, please.
Yeah, sure.
The Fine Print Mint proudly introduces the American Bimbo Collection.
Oh, great. Marla Maples.
Each month, you'll receive a classic American Bimbo, lovingly handcrafted by the artisans of the Fine Print Mint. There's Jessica Hahn, Donna Rice, Robin Givens, Rob Lowe, even Ted Kennedy. And each Bimbo is crafted from material as cheap and tacky as they are.
Look, Dad! Her head was hollow!
Collect them, swap them, put them on a pedestal, and then knock them off. Your family will spend hours admiring the amazingly accurate detail on each and every Bimbo.
Look at the bongos on that one, son.
And if you act now, we'll rush you the complete Steve Garvey collection, including all his illegitimate children. To order, send your check to 12 Easy Pieces, Post Office Box T&A, Jigamore, Colorado, for the American Bimbo Collection.
Great set, huh, Dad?
Now, thing number two today is a dichotomy that I find that just blows me away. One definition of the word says it is a division into two mutually exclusive, opposed, or contradictory groups, a dichotomy between thought and action, another being torn between two opinions. This is salient to me today because of the recent killings in a small Amish schoolhouse in Pennsylvania in the United States. A man with revenge and craziness on his mind armed himself, prepared to take and hold hostages, entered this quaint little one-room school bristling with guns, and then he let 15 young boys leave. He also let a pregnant woman leave. That's not all. He also let some young women with small babies go. Then he turned to the remaining occupants of the small school, some little girls between the ages of 6 and 13. These little girls he tied with zip ties and shot in the head, execution style. Just before he turned a weapon on himself and took his own life. So here is where the dichotomy looms so large for me personally. This man went there with murder in mind. Yet even as he let the young males leave, he knew he was still going to kill. And he seemed to let some sort of compassion guide him after that when he let the pregnant woman and young mothers leave. And then he still, cold-bloodedly, shot tiny little girls. Two of which had actually stepped forward, volunteering to lose their lives to try and save the rest of the girls. As he was killing these young girls, he obviously, untouched by their show of true honor and bravery, was asking them to pray for him. Surely I am not the only one that is more confused by this massive difference, these strange turns in this man's mind. I'm experiencing a huge dichotomy of my own in that I am happy that he let some go and enraged that he still took lives. I'm torn between wanting to know why he did this and never wanting to even come close to wanting to understand the mechanism that allowed him to free some and kill others. I am torn between being disappointed and upset that he killed himself and cheated many people out of whatever feeling of satisfaction and justice that comes from a person like this standing trial and being convicted and sentenced, even though it won't change anything or bring back those shining little sparks of bravery, honor, and humanity at its best, and being so very glad that he offed himself and is no longer wasting the air that innocents breathe, or sullying the planet with his evil, or raising his own children. I am torn between wanting to let this ugly thing and that ugly man die away and out of memory, and finding some way to remind the world every day that little girls can be the bravest and most honorable of all mankind and all things. I am torn between ranting on and on about the ways I am torn, and making it short and not so sweet, and ending this segment on whatever sort of note this is. So I'll just let it go for now, and invite comment. If you have any to share, do it on the homepage of the show. There are lots of ways. 3things.podomatic.com. That's thing number 2. Finished. And now, it's time for this day in history. Today, of course, being October 6th. Who, you might ask, was born on this day? Well, in 1808, Frederick VII, who was the first constitutional king of Denmark, was born. And in 1809, Alfred Lord Tennyson, heck of a poet, was born. In 1820, Jenny Lind of Sweden, who had the most gorgeous soprano voice, first exercised it, crying like a big old baby because she was brand new. 1831 saw the birth of Richard Dedekind, who was a whale of a mathematician. In 1846, George Westinghouse was born. Does that sound familiar? Yep. That's because he is responsible for alternating current in the U.S., alternate current being the AC part of AC/DC, and I don't mean the rock band. DC, of course, being direct current. In 1866, a fellow named Reginald Aubrey Fessenden was born. He radio broadcast the first program of voice and music. 1888 saw the birth of Li Ta-chao, co-founder with Mao Zedong of the Chinese Communist Party. 1909 saw the birth of the fabulous actress Carol Lombard of My Man Godfrey fame. 1914 saw the beginning of the many journeys of Thor Heyerdahl of Norway. He was the anthropologist and explorer famous for the Kon-Tiki and Aku Aku. And as for who died today, In the year 404, Eudoxia Aelia, the Empress of Austria, lost her life. In 877, Charles II the Kale, King of France and Roman Emperor from 875 to 877, died at the ripe old age of 54. In 1891, Charles Stuart Parnell, leader of the Irish Party, died. 1979 saw the death of Elizabeth Bishop, who was a poet. She died at 68 years of age. In 1981, on this day, October 6th, Anwar Sadat was assassinated and Hosni Mubarak became the Egyptian president. In 1989, Betty Davis, with her big pretty eyes, died at the age of 81. 1993 saw the death of Agnes DeMille, U.S. dancer and choreographer of Oklahoma fame. She died at the age of 88. Historically, on this day, in 891, Formosus began his reign as Catholic Pope. In 1536, Anglican priest William Tyndale was captured at Antwerp, where he was strangled and burnt. He is credited with making the first English translation of the Bible. In 1683, 13 German families arrived in what is now Philadelphia. In 1781, Americans and French began the siege of Cornwallis at Yorktown. It was the last battle of the Revolutionary War. 1866 saw the first train robbery in the United States. In 1876, the American Library Association organized in Philadelphia. Yay, because I love books. 1886 saw the start of the Sherlock Holmes adventure, The Resident Patient. In 1889, Thomas Edison showed his first motion picture. In 1926, Babe Ruth hit 3 home runs in a World Series game. 1927 saw The Jazz Singer, the first movie with a soundtrack. In 1928, Chiang Kai-shek became president of China. In 1939, Hitler announced he had no intention of war with Britain and France. In 1949, Eva Toguri de Aquino, Tokyo Rose, was sentenced to 10 years and a $10,000 fine. In 1954, E.L. Lyon became the first male nurse for the U.S. Army. 1959, Soviet Luna 3, the first successful photographic spacecraft, impacted the moon. In 1961, John F. Kennedy advised Americans to build fallout shelters. In 1961, USSR performed nuclear tests at Kapustin Yar and Novaya Zemlya. In 1967, Haight-Ashbury hippies threw a funeral to mark the end of hippiedom. In 1969, for the first time in Beatles history, a George Harrison song got the A-side of a 45, Come Together and Something. 1973 saw the beginning of the Yom Kippur Wars, as Syria and Egypt attacked Israel. In 1976, John Hathaway completed a bicycle tour of every continent in the world and cycled 50,600 miles. In 1976 as well, Disco Duck by Rick Dees and his cast of idiots received a gold record. I don't know why. In 1976, President Ford said, "There is no Soviet domination in Eastern Europe." Also in 1976, the Gang of Four, Mao's widow Jiang Qing, and 3 of her close associates, Zhang Chunqiao, Yao Wenyuan, and Wang Hongwen, were arrested in Beijing. In 1979, Pope John Paul II was the first pope to visit the White House. In 1990, the U.S. 67th manned space mission, STS-41, or Discovery 11, launched into orbit. And 1991 saw Elizabeth Taylor's 8th wedding. The ceremony was held at Michael Jackson's estate near LA, California. It was Taylor's 8th marriage, and Larry Fortinsky, her beau's, 3rd. As for holidays on October 6th, in Egypt it is Armed Forces Day. The Armed Forces Day is celebrated on October 6th, or in the Islamic calendar, the 10th of Ramadan, in commemoration of the Egyptian successes early in the Yom Kippur War, which started on October 6, 1973. So there we go. Rather an interesting day this. I was pretty excited to share some of those tidbits with you. I hoped you liked the ones I did. Comments? Want to leave one? Well, sure. Just go to the homepage of the show, threethings.podomatic.com, and leave one. They are always appreciated. I can't wait to see what happened next Friday.
Hit when she slipped and fell down the stairs. I like the woman with the white her. She's Demi Moore and I'm Ashton Kutcher. I like the way you're looking in pants, say you're fine. When grandma was my age, bread cost a dime. I tried on her glasses and it almost made me blind. I think if we hook up, she'll write me in the willing time. She got new hips, stays off her legs, takes naps. I throw out her spine, hitting that from the back. She like it when I take her out the home for a bit. Boobs sagging, so her bra gets caught in a zip. I know she grown a little bit, 80 years old, medieval. Plays bridge with the people. Pinochle and bingo, get in a movie cheaper, senior citizens rate. The best parking spots, that's why I gotta say. I like the woman with the white her. Bust a hip when she slipped and fell down the stairs. I like the woman with the white her. Licks her lips when she takes out her dentures. I like the woman with the white her. Sipping on Metamucil for five birds. I like the woman with the white her. I love the sound of her respirator.
And thing three today is all about manners. I hope all of the horrible parents out there on earth hear what I'm about to say and recognize themselves and more the behavior of their rude and mannerless children. I have witnessed horrible misbehaving children in restaurants, bars, movie theaters, and stores. Why, once this little girl tried to trip me as I walked past her seat on aisle at the theater. I suppose the brat thought it would be a hoot, but if she had succeeded, she and her parent, a term I now use very loosely, would have missed the show that Mom had paid at least $80 a ticket for, and I would have had a good chuckle. This goes out to all those parents. Please discipline your children and teach them proper manners and etiquette. It's not as difficult as it seems to raise a kind, gentle, and mannerly child, and it might just make their lives happier and more fulfilling. Ever think of that, all you parental units out there that think it's cute for little sissy or brother to toss food or scream in a restaurant? No one wants to hear any more excuses about why you choose to bring children to inappropriate places either. If your kid is sick, leave it at home. If you can't find a babysitter, don't leave. Or better yet, don't have kids if you don't want to or don't know how to raise them. Do not bring your children to places not meant for children, like upscale restaurants, bars, R or more rated films, weddings, funerals, seminars, college graduations. They don't need to be there now, do they? They're not going to remember it, probably. And hey, just do this, just this simple thing. Give your kid and the world around it a break. Teach your kids, at very least, the five fabulous phrases: please, thank you, you're welcome, excuse me, and I'm sorry, will you forgive me? Even the little bittiest kids can learn to have a penitent heart and say I'm sorry and actually mean it. When they have to ask forgiveness and wait for a response, it keeps them from just flippantly tossing out a half-mumbled sorry and moving on. Makes the little rotters think a minute, and that's a good thing. It isn't just the rest of humanity that benefits from a mannerly child. Parents, too, reap many rewards from raising a child with good manners. When one of my youngins says, "Thanks for the great meal, Mommy," or "Thanks for the ride, Mama," It just makes me feel so very happy inside, and it makes me want to make an even better meal for them next time and drive them all over the place. And hey, remember the golden rule? I think most of us learned it as kids, but sometimes we forget. It's known in every culture in the world. Treat others as you would like them to treat you. This is really the foundation for all manners. Treat others nicely and with respect. If you don't want someone to be mean to you, then don't be mean to them. If you want people to say nice things about you, then say nice things about them. This may seem like common sense, but unfortunately there's not a lot of common courtesy floating around anymore. Boy, would I like to be proven wrong in that statement. As children grow older, they should be told the rules of outings, how to behave, and to always speak softly if other adults are present. It isn't a hard lesson. The reasoning is this. If kids learn that they are free to trample on the peace, space, or rose gardens of others, they will develop into spoiled and inconsiderate brats and bad grown-ups. And then who will like them? Who will want to spend time with them? Who, besides their parents, will be able to tolerate their lack of social graces and good manners? No one, except maybe another ill-mannered person who feels at home with a similarly clueless individual. Do we really want our children reduced to such horrible options? I think not. We teach our children not to steal, lie, or punch their brother in the nose. Shouldn't we teach them to respect others at the same time? That their whining and out-of-control behavior is something no one really wants to hear or see, especially strangers who have no interest in their developing minds or self-esteem? A simple reminder of the rules consistently works wonders. And rudeness and bad behavior isn't only the domain of children. Believe it or not, minding your P's and Q's really does make a difference in the grown-up world of business these days. Yeah, believe it or not, firms hire for manners these days. It's true, good manners and therefore better business relations are important to companies. Everything else can be taught to employees, but manners that come with the package are a definite plus. So how can you incorporate a little Emily Post into your corporate life? It's not as hard as you might think. Here are a few suggestions for you. First, focus on the present. We've all turned into multitasking machines. We talk on the phone, check email, travel to the next meeting and eat lunch, all at the same time. But juggling tasks is overrated and frankly unfulfilling for all involved. Slow down, focus, and put your full attention into everything you do. People notice and appreciate your interest. And then when you're on the phone, smile as you talk. Smiling almost forces you to articulate more. It's harder to mumble and slur your words when you smile, and a smile comes through in your voice and tone. Call me old-fashioned, but it really is nice when you can reach a smiling human being on the other end of the line. How about listening to your phone's outgoing message? Make it easy for people to find you and follow up with you, especially if you're in a people business. It's perfectly acceptable to say that you're traveling and unable to check messages regularly, or that you prefer people to leave messages at another number, or even to set your cell phone so that it doesn't accept messages at all. But just flat out announcing that you don't welcome voice messages makes you seem unapproachable and cold, and neither are desirable qualities in business. Apologize when you make a mistake. It's the cover-up or denial, not the screw-up, that ultimately gets you in trouble. Everyone has emergencies or technology snafus. It's how you handle these situations that show your character. People can become more loyal than they ever would have otherwise if you rectify a bad situation by addressing the problem and making amends. The dog ate my homework, didn't work in high school, and it won't work in business. Come clean and make good on your promises. Let the call go into voicemail. Turn off your cell phone when you're in a meeting, and forward your phone into voicemail when people are in your office. If you respond to every incoming call or text, you send a message that the person you are actually sitting with just isn't important. People don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. So give them your full attention and be engaged in the conversation that's right in front of you. You should always practice positive email etiquette. Before you hit send after writing what you think is a witty and sarcastic email that will win whatever verbal war you are in, take a walk, get a cup of coffee, and then give it one last read to make sure that's really what you want to say, particularly because God knows what can be left on a printer or circulated to too many people. Acknowledge gifts when you get them, and a simple thank you is sufficient. It's embarrassing for both parties to have to follow up to make sure a gift was received. The person who sent the gift isn't fishing for a compliment, they just want to be sure their package was delivered, and the recipient knows they should have responded sooner. Save everyone the hassle and just drop a quick email saying if it arrived. And lastly, if you've had a crappy day at the office or bank or restaurant or whatever, don't take it out on the next receptionist or cashier or waitress you come across. When things aren't going your way, don't let the first person you come in contact with take the brunt of your anger. It reflects badly on you, and it's likely that whatever went wrong wasn't their fault anyway. Take the high road and be nice. You'll attract more bees with honey anyway. Maybe all good manners just go back to the golden rule. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Teach your children well. Remember yourself. You may just find that good manners will turn into good money. It's the little things that add up to making a great impression with every encounter, not just the first one. Focus, smile, listen, and always mind your manners. That's enough for thing number three today. Thank you for listening.
Comes to sex, you're responsible, but now they're marketing big size condoms, and frankly, you'd need a belt and suspenders to keep one on. Well, don't be embarrassed. Hot Dog House now offers regular size condoms with big size package names.
Bob, you dropped something from your wallet.
Oh my God, it's
here.
My...
here. Oh, the Hindenburg.
Only kind I use.
Order your regular size condoms from Hot Dog House with names that give you confidence. The Jolly Mean Giant, Cruise Missile, Pike's Peak, Superdome. Only you'll know the real story, but for a while.
So, why is there a munchkin riding in the Hindenburg?
And that is all I have to say about that for right now. Until something else comes along. On these, or really any subject on three things, which something will because it always does. Life, eh? It's crazy sometimes, the things one thinks about. If you have a particular thing wearing on your mind, or a thing you've always wondered about, why don't you leave me a comment or a question? I live for this stuff, you know. Leaving comments is easy, and I'm sure you know how to leave them by now. That's right, homepage. 3things.podomatic.com. I'll do my best to educate, enlighten, and or entertain. Come back and join me next week on Friday, October 13th for show number 37 of 3 Things. In the meantime, remember to leave a nice tip if your server or clerk or whatever deserves it. Remember to earn a good tip with good service if you are the server or clerk or whatever. Teach everyone to be polite and mannerly by being polite and mannerly in your life, and smile a lot, just because a smile is a beautiful thing. And never forget, always remember to forgive yourself and be happy. Good day.
That was so thrilling.
Missed it by that much.
Happy trails, Spaz.
Yada, yada, yada. Blah, blah, blah.
Well, there you have it, folks. Another happy ending from the good people.
Three Things.
Incorporated.
Done, sold, Bob's your uncle.
Just smile and wave, boys. Smile and wave.
We got it! We got it! Yes!
Now it's your turn.
Make love and be merry, for tomorrow you may catch some disgusting skin disease.
Goodbye, good luck, and good riddance.
I will accept nothing less than
Three Things.
Good night, everybody.
Oh, this is dreadful.
I'm chanting as we speak. Bye-bye, darling.
Dismiss. Shove off, you old trout.
That wasn't flying.
Three Things.
That was falling with style.
And I didn't like it one bit. It was disgusting and violent. I think all you people are despicable. I say!
We're putting that bitch on ice.
I promise nothing.
back to the lock with ye, Nessie.
There comes a time in every friendship when you have to say, I never liked you, get lost.
All right, that's it for me. You've been great.
Help control the pet population. Have your pets spayed or neutered.